On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap another weekend of the regular season here in 2025. Four sweeps courtesy of the Dodgers, Yankees, Braves, and Royals. I recap my experience at the Little League Classic in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and Jake tells me about all the other baseball because I didn't watch it. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. Excited for MLB to expand to dessert. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if we're talking about expansion, you know, forget two more teams. Like, let's offer other products.
Oh, interesting. I'm sure that is exactly what the commissioner had in mind when he gave us a little hint, a little peek into baseball's future, emphasis on future, probably very distant future. We are going to talk about that clip that circulated last night. I didn't really notice it live because I was there in Williamsport, Pennsylvania for the Little League Classic. You'll get my recap of that later on in this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Normally, Jake, I spend some of my Sundays preparing for Monday's show and, you know, having watched a lot of baseball and, you know, checking in, say, all right, who's going for a sweep? Who's maybe going for a mop? What's going to be our lead series to start our Monday episode? But because I was in Williamsport, running around, sweating, and watching major leaguers interact with children, I didn't watch a lot of other baseball. So I am trusting you, my dear friend, to carry us here this fine Monday morning, and I will handle everything involving Max and Snoozy and Luca Pellegrini and all the other great stars of the Little League World Series.
It's amazing. We'll talk about kids' names in a little bit, but they're getting, whew. You know, when I was a kid, everyone was just named Ben.
I'm glad. Yeah. You know, I kind of go back and forth because it makes the names truly, like, literally more memorable in a very functional way. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
the
names, like, I'm, you know, I'm wearing a Team Mexico hat. Their star player, Gregorio Madrid. That's not a name you're going to forget. Right. And also a personality that certainly left an impression. So we'll get to all the Little League stuff later. But I do understand there was some high stakes Major League Baseball action beyond the Little League Classic and the Mets and Mariners. And it sounds like that's probably where we need to start.
Yeah, we will start. We had four sweeps this weekend, including one between the Dodgers and the Padres.
Clean up, everybody.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
On Friday, we came on this podcast with the Padres one game up in the National League West, and we said the Dodgers are cooked and the Padres are flying high and they will never lose again. No, that's not what we said. What we said was the season starts now for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And if that really is the case, then they started hot, going 3-0 over the weekend, sweeping the Padres, regaining a two-game lead in the National League West. All of these games, really game one and game three, were both tight. Game two, a little bit of a laugher. We'll start with the game one. Kershaw was awesome. Allows just one run on a Laureano solo home run. Mookie go-ahead slack fly. Teoscar has a solo shot. They win 3-2. Game two, Dylan Cease didn't have it, walked, I think, three or four in the first. To, like, it was an ugly show. Really ugly Jackson Merrill error. Teoscar homers again. Blake Snell, awesome. The Padres clearly, like, had a plan against Snell to just run as much as they could. And Will Smith threw out three dudes in the span of, like, five batters, and it completely backfired. Game three, Freddie Freeman goes yard off of Darvish in the first, three-run shot. Andy Pages adds one. Padres kind of crawl back. Ramon Laureano homers again. And then with the game tied in the eighth, Baseball Barbacast guest Mookie Betts, as he's known in America, go ahead, solo shot to win it. Alex Vesia, five-out, I guess, win. Save, win, because he was in the game. blows it by Machado to end it. And the Dodgers take all three in a statement sweep of all statement sweeps.
Yeah. So, you know, I caught bits and pieces of this. Obviously, you know, the MLB folks on the ground in Williamsport, this is a series that people were talking about and kind of monitoring anyway. So this is certainly the one that I kind of caught the most of. And I know that there was some discourse on Sunday about why Robert Suarez was in the game at that point in a tie game in the eighth when you just traded the farm for Mason Miller, who didn't pitch since Friday. Hopefully Mason Miller is not injured or anything. I don't know if they are just monitoring his workload. But I bring that up because whatever the reason, whether Mike Schilt thought that using Suarez in that spot instead of Miller was more of an example of urgency, right? We go back to that concept of urgency, which team looked like they were treating this series with more importance. Now, again, it's not like the Padres didn't care. It sounds like they essentially failed to execute on every possible way. Every part of their team did not, except for, sounds like Ramon Laureano was killing it. It seems like everyone else on both sides of the ball were just not having it. And meanwhile, the Dodgers had some guys that, of course, have not been doing well, it seems to show up, whether that's Teoscar, whether that's, of course, Mookie, which is good to see. And then yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Vessia, too, because I think that's the biggest, one of the biggest questions about the Dodgers at this stage of the season is who is getting these last outs. The bullpen has been injured and disappointing. Vessia has been part of that disappointment. Like, I feel like I've watched him give up a million home runs this season, and for him to kind of show up there and get it done feels has to feel especially good for him and for Dave Roberts to just like go to a guy and get the outs that you need in a close game.
I mean, there was no one behind him. So they, like, the only available reliever was Justin Robleski. But I do still think it is indicative that it's the first time all year that Vessia got five outs and that, you know, Roberts admitted it was kind of past that comfort zone. This is what I was talking about on Friday, right? Where part of the reason the Dodgers are where they are is that they have been more conservative and passive with bullpen usage. And that's not the only reason why they've been underwhelming, obviously. It's not maybe even the biggest reason, but it's a reason. And I think that this was a sign. Like, okay, here we go. Alex Vessia, five outs. We're going to need them. The Padres just looked really out of sorts. They went 16 for 94 with zero homers all weekend for hitters not named Ramon Laureano. Laureano, 4 for 12 with two homers and a double.
Yeah, so again, like just a lot of positives for the Dodgers offense to see Freddie do that. I mean, Kershaw, just like, again, there's probably a larger Kershaw thing, conversation to be had, I think, at some point here down the stretch before we get to the postseason. Mookie's certainly looking better. And then, yeah, Cease, it's really disappointing from Cease just because it felt like he was really turning a corner. You know, we talked about when we had Lance Brozdowski on talking about his pitch usage maybe changing. I didn't look at his pitch mix this weekend, but I clearly didn't matter because his command was terrible. And when Cease doesn't have his command, which is, it's kind of a thin, you know, it's pretty close. You know, it's not like his command is usually pinpoint. And so when it's bad, it can be really bad. And it's just in that spot when you feel like you have him, you feel like he should be able to match Snell and quite the opposite. And hey, credit to Snell too. That's another character that he had made, what, two starts before his 3-month absence. So we haven't really given him much thought as like a Dodgers character at all. And yeah, in a way that we have with Glasnow, right? Like we have a season of Glasnow where him being injured and then coming back, we're kind of used to that. And even Kershaw, same thing. But like, I still don't think I've fully processed that like Blake Snell's on the Dodgers, you know, like where this is really important.
Him being really good this weekend serves as a reminder that the Dodgers rotation, now healthy, is a legitimate game-changing strength. That their five right now is Snell, Glasnow, Ohtani, Yamamoto, and this eternal version of Clayton Kershaw. Like, are all five of those pitchers going to be rearing and ready on October 2nd, healthy? I would take,
I mean, history
the under
tells
on
us
five.
No.
I would take the under on 4.5. Yeah. Like, still, it is right now at this snapshot on August 18th, it is a legitimate strength. The Dodgers head to Colorado this weekend to take on the smoking hot Colorado Rockies. The Padres, yeah, we'll talk about it. The Padres, meanwhile, head home to take on the Giants, who are just an embarrassment. Anything else from this series before we move on?
No, but obviously we're already looking forward to this next edition. It carries a little bit of a different weight than if this had not been a sweep. But you mentioned Padres going home. How did they perform against the Dodgers at home? Presumably that would be a little bit of a better situation. And then, you know, Dodgers going for that undefeated season against the Rockies, 6-0 so far. And I believe it's four games this week, if I'm not mistaken. So that is both an opportunity, but also weird stuff happens at Coors Field. So we will see if we will see what that ends up looking like. But it's also possible they have maybe more of a comfy lead by the time they head to San Diego at the end of the week.
I think that's it. That's all the all right, Dodgers, Padres thoughts.
Sorry, we doubted you. I mean, I don't even know if we doubted you. Soon as we finished that podcast on Friday, it was just like, oh boy. Feels like this is how this is going to go. We just did a version of this all of last season. And so we'll probably end up doing it again. And we'll show up in October and we'll say the Padres are the better team. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, but, you know, maybe they'll lose.
Padres manager Mike Schilt will use the term punch back at some point.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, again, like, did you have any sense for the Mason Miller thing, or was that just
no?
Was I just seeing angry Padres fans? Okay, all right.
I think that's it.
That was strange. All right, let's go to St. Louis. Right, this was in St. Louis, where the Yankees kind of bouncing back here. What happened in this one?
What happened is they played the Cardinals. So it turns out that playing the worst, the bad teams, is good. And easier to win is really the main takeaway. Let's fly through the games. Luis Hill, solid in game one. Jazz homers. Camilo Doval gives up a home run. Weaver and Bednar are good. Yankees win 4-3. There was a hilarious play in this game where Cardinals reliever Ryan Fernandez picked off on a spin move to second, but no fielder broke to the bag. Jose Caballero, however, was on second base. And the ball just like whizzes by his head, and it looked like he was trying to play dodgeball. And then he just, you know, skitters off to third. Game two, Sonny Gray, Max Fried on the Fox afternoon game, billed as a pitcher's duel. Instead, it was pitcher's stool because it was crap. They were both bad. 7 RBI in that one for Ben Rice. Just another awful Jason Dominguez left field defensive blunder.
I did see that one.
It's not getting better. The Jason Dominguez defense experiment, are they going to just go get Verdugo back to play left field in the playoffs again?
Hold on. Is he a free agent? I know you're just talking on a podcast, so I don't want to get too critical of your word choice. Experiment? The guy's an outfielder. He needs to play outfield. Like, this is just... This is part of the job.
Left field. Left field is an experiment. But
do we think it would be that much better in center? I mean, my God. And this is why it's so weird talking about Dominguez. I clearly he's not better than Grisham or Bellinger, or he would be out there. But it is a very funny situation. I can't remember any other world where you're talking about a center field prospect where it's like, man, but like, can he handle left? It's like, no, he can't handle left. I guess we have to put him back in center or like move him to the infield. Like, I have no idea.
Right. It's like this concert saxophonist can't play the kazoo. You know? It's Judge Homer's in this game, too.
I just thought that was funny.
No, you're so right. You're so right. Yeah. You're so right. Judge Homer's in this game, too. He now has a home run versus every single team, which is cool.
Nice.
Except for the Yankees.
That's cool.
The question is, does he ever get one against the Yankees? Yes or no?
That is an awesome question that Yankees fans surely do not want to hear us speculate on right now.
If you include inner squads, Aaron Judge is now homered against every single team.
Yes.
Yankees outlast the Cardinals in that one. And then game three, Will Warren fine. Yankees hitting zero homers in a game started by Miles Michaelis is like...
Inexcusable.
The coughing baby taking on the hydrogen bomb and winning. But they don't win because the Yankees win this one 8-4. Ollie Marmol ejected, his fifth of the year, tying him for the league lead, I believe, with Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone almost gets ejected in this one, but finds a way to stay in it. Tanner Swanson, Yankees catching coach, gets the heave-ho. Bad day behind the dish for Nick Lentz, the umpire. Yankees score four in the top of the ninth and win 8-4. Couple quick things here I want to talk about. Yankee sweep, good. Beating the bad teams, good. They open up the wild card lead to 3.5 games. That is good. Max Fried has been horrendous since the All-Star break with a 7 ERA since, I guess that was July 14th. I don't know. Our friend of the program, Lance Brodzowski, said that he wrote that he thinks it's mechanical. It's a lot to do with fastball command and location. Seems more fixable than, say, if all of the velo was down significantly. I will bet on Max Fried figuring things out by the time he has to pitch in an important game in late September and October. Giancarlo Stanton, meanwhile, this may surprise you, playing in the outfield, not good for his body. This is from Brendan Cuddy at The Athletic. When Giancarlo Stanton worked a pinch hit walk in the ninth inning, it was his first action since Wednesday. Out of the starting lineup all 3 days in St. Louis, after Boone said he had more difficulty than expected recovering from playing right field on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at Yankee Stadium. Early Sunday, Stanton declined to tell reporters if he was dealing with an injury. So that's indicative, right? Hey, you injured? I plead the fifth. Like, just no healthy dude.
It's just like, it's
what
sucks,
healthy
man.
Ball player? It's Jordan. I know it sucks, but what healthy ball player, like, I don't want to read between the lines too much. It's like, hey, how you feeling? If you're feeling great, you just say, I'm feeling great, right? Like, right?
That's true. I just, again, the Stanton, it's so exhausting. And like, I just feel like none of us are surprised. This is the whole reason why they don't ever want him out there for any reason. And so we know this. We know his body cannot handle it. This has been true for years. So I hope that we still get to see him hit home runs in October or before October or whatever. But none of this is surprising. So and ultimately, too, no matter how he's choosing to handle it with reporters or how Aaron Boone is choosing to talk about it, it's also a situation where they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. Like, why would we assume that he's fine?
They're being the vague about a Stanton injury?
Yeah, default answer is that he is kind of injured, as he has been for five straight years. So again, love the guy. He's one of my favorite players of this generation of baseball, but that is just part of this whole deal.
Yankees heading down to the Stein, their second trip at George Steinbrenner Field, their home in spring training. George Steinbrenner.
Last thing on the Yankees, and then we will move to the Gardos getting embarrassed. Just two games, by the way, against the Rays this week, which is a little strange. Just some weird scheduling shenanigans. If I am reading the schedule correctly, though, looking back through the Yankees results, now it is not breaking news that the Yankees have like not played great over the last few months. But from what I can tell, this series win, this sweep over the Cardinals coming off a series win over the Twins, is the first time the Yankees have won consecutive series since the end of May, when they beat the Rockies and Angels on the road. So that is getting back to what you started this with, which is, oh yeah, the Yankees can beat bad teams. It's like, yep. And apparently not any good teams at any point with consistency over the last 2.5 months. So we will see how that manifests over the rest of the season. They do still have a lot of games against bad teams, including 7 against the White Sox, you know, and a bunch more against 7 against the Orioles. So there are more bad teams to play. But
unfortunately,
you know, it'd be nice to see them play good teams.
Not any bad teams in the playoffs, though, usually. That's,
All right, well, this is discourse for another day. Let's go to Cleveland, where I was not. I was like, ooh, maybe I'll go on Friday, do a little pregame. And then it was like, ooh, Morgan Wallen concert downtown. A lot going on. Don't really want to involved in that amount of traffic. So I hung out with my friend and didn't go. So I was not around any of this game. Obviously, I drove to Williamsport on Saturday. But I was a little bit curious from the standpoint of, well, the Braves are playing pretty well and the Guardians have an opportunity here to stay relevant in this playoff race. And instead, it just seems like the Braves, way too late, are remembering that they have a lot of really good baseball players and kind of kicking the crap out of some teams. Now, granted, like
the Drake meme with the computer.
Some of the pitchers that they're rolling out there is maybe not the arms we expected, but offensively, and oh my God, what Michael Harris has been doing. Holy crap.
So to switch gears a little bit, you mentioned the Morgan Wallen concert in downtown Cleveland. According to Billboard, Morgan Wallen is the number one artist in the country right now. Now that, you know, it's like power rankings. According Taylor Swift is number one. Like he's very famous. Jordan, name a Morgan Wallen song.
Dude, I had this thought they showed on the big screen at Little League Classic. Who is the most popular artist at the Little League World Series? Because all the kids say
Morgan Wallen by a artist mile. Is.
And Morgan Wallen was he barely edged out Bad Bunny. But I got nothing for you. Seriously. I'm just like, man.
Yeah.
Or like, what's going on? So anyway, the point is, I'm sure. Well, hey, let's bring it back to baseball. I'm sure, plenty of Braves fans love Morgan Wallen. There are a lot of
Braves. That's the Morgan Wallen song. There's Morgan Wallen song about the Braves.
About the Braves. Okay, so there you go. So
I think it's just called 98 Braves.
And how about that? And he was, I believe, in Cleveland this weekend as the Braves were just taking it to the Gardos.
As the Braves scored 98 runs.
Yeah, this was, I mean, it just seemed like the Cleveland offense was terrible. And I mean, is there anything specific from these games other than Michael Harris? Again, like, let's just take a pause here. The splits with him are pretty wild. I don't have it up perfectly, but, you know, classic before and after situation with him. If you look at his numbers through, I want to say it was like first week of July, maybe. Maybe a little bit before then, actually. July, I think it's like July 10th, maybe. Michael Harris was the worst hitter in baseball. He was the worst qualified hitter in baseball. I think through July 10th, I think he had the lowest WRC plus. And that has not been the case since then. He has been outrageous. He changed his stance. He's now holding his hands much higher. Sometimes you hear about stance changes and then you tune in and you're like, this is not different. Like, what are we talking about? This looks very different. This is like, that is a different hitter. This is a different thing. So how much is that helping?
Michael Harris changed his approach. He's now trying to hit the baseball. He has been since that date you mentioned. Since that date, July 10th, I mean, I love cherry picking these. This makes me happy.
Yeah.
Since July 10th, he is the fifth highest WRC plus in baseball. Fifth highest. Mm-hmm. Behind?
Kurtz. Nick Always Kurtz. Stowers, if he qualifies.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Maybe he doesn't qualify. Otani.
Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Yep.
Otani.
Yep. And
Shea Langeliers. Oh,
dude, different A's are just taking turns. We've had God, they're so frustrating. Like Brent Rooker, Lawrence Butler, Nick Kurtz, Jacob Wilson, Shea Langeliers have all had like month-long top five hitter in baseball. And
yeah,
they stink.
They stink.
But anyway, Michael Harris. So it is a reminder of just like he is absurdly talented, right? I mean, is a guy, it doesn't seem like he's changed his approach. He's still striking out a ton and never walking ever. I think he hasn't walked in, is this right? He hasn't walked in the last 20 games and he has 15 multi-hit games. I don't know. This is an absurd stretch that he's had in August. So it is nice for Michael Harris in particular because he is a super important part of the Braves' future. Maybe this is a lost season, but, you know, at this point, a huge showing from even like a Profar or like even like a Sean Murphy, who's maybe a little bit past the prime in the same way, doesn't carry the same weight as when Michael Harris, who we thought was going to be
new
awesome
stance,
and then has just been getting worse, and then now he looks fantastic. Yeah. So good for him.
The always sustainable 373, 373, 687 line so far in August. Like okay. you said, not a exactly. single walk. The Gardos go to Arizona this week for a we used to employ Josh Naylor showdown. And then they go to Texas. So a road trip for Cleveland as they try and cut back into the lead that the Yankees built over the weekend. Let's move to Kansas City, where the Royals swept the White Sox. The Royals now, having swept the White Sox, are just four games back of the Yankees in the wild card. And most importantly, they are just one game back of Cleveland for the, ooh, I guess, whoa, you know, fourth on the podium or fourth right off the podium for the wild card race. I mean, if you should get a prize if you're the team that just misses out. And the Royals, they might be that. They win game one. Noah Cameron, underrated start for him. Vinny got like overheated on Saturday and had to leave the game. He tweeted a gif that made me laugh. I don't remember what it was. John Rave, a name that we have not joked enough about. He gets the party started, and he comes in for a tired Vinny Pasquantino and goes yard. Royals win 6-2. And then Ryan Burgert, who the Padres could have used over the weekend, traded for Freddie Fermin, who, by the way, pretty good. One earned run, seven strikeouts. Homers from Jonathan India and Adam Frazier, who I forgot was on the Royals again. Jonathan India was struggling, and he borrowed Cole Reagans' pants. Just like took his pants from his locker, put them on, and he's been playing well. And it's just a reminder, like, baseball is such a bizarre workspace, you know? Just take your coworker's pants.
Yeah, that is a weird one. And they're like, yeah, of course, wearing his pants. What's the big deal?
Can I wear your pants?
This is nice little run but see, this is the other thing. It's like, great, even if you were willing to be generous, it's like they ain't fitting. And no, like, I don't think I would have guessed that Jonathan India, I know baseball pants is a little bit more flexibility.
So,
but like their size, isn't Cole Reagans like much taller and larger than Jonathan India?
Well, that was the thing. He wanted a looser fit. We've known each other a long time. I don't think I've ever worn your pants. I don't think I've ever worn a pair of your pants.
Way.
Maybe
no
a pair
chance.
Of shorts, like athletic shorts, but like never.
Yeah. No, definitely worn a pair of your pants. Actually, pants, there's no chance. It wouldn't fit. There's no
you got to walk a mile in your buddy's pants.
This is limited. And by the way, the timing here is good because here, this is a good example of like my perception of the Royals in the standings. The point I was about to make was, oh, okay, you know, you're catching up to Cleveland and you are over 500, you're playing better, and you're about to play four games against the Rangers, who are also right there. And then I pull up the standings and I realize that they have already passed the Rangers. They're a game and a half up on Texas, who is now below 500 and just isn't very good. The Rangers still have a plus 50 run differential despite being a game under. But whatever, the standings are so close enough that four games here at this stage, Royals Rangers, is will maybe give us some clarity on whether we should take either of these teams remotely seriously in September.
Those are the baseball games that only one team won all weekend. Let's take a break, and when we get back, Jordan's going to tell me about the Little League Classic, dude. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. One of the more humbling and enjoyable parts of our job is when we get to go see stuff and then write about it and talk about it. And that's Field Report. Jordan, you didn't watch much baseball played by adults over the weekend. I would argue the only weekend in the
Just
year in which
game.
You watch more children playing baseball than adults. You were in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. I would say, if I had to rank my top 10 American cities, I mean, Williamsport, for me, brother, that place rules.
It's a good time. This is an event that I have been looking forward to getting back to for quite some time. As I tweeted about this, I've probably mentioned it here, but this is, you know, of course, Little League World Series is something that we've, you know, followed growing up and whatnot. And Jake has a personal connection, sort of removed, but also sort of close, which honestly, like, you haven't told that story in a while. So I'm actually going to clear out here before I blabber for, you know, a couple minutes about what I saw this weekend. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can see a newspaper kind of cover of the Bristol Press. Bristol Press, I guess that's what the publication is. What is it? I see a photo of a young Jake Mintz. And what am I looking at? Can you remind us of what the context of this photo and how it connects to the Little League World Series? And just spoiler alert, this is not in Williamsport, but it was thinking about Williamsport. Williamsport was on the mind of that young kid right there.
You're looking at greatness, is what you're looking at. All right, that's what you're looking at. I was fortunate enough to go to the Little League World Series regionals twice. The regionals is the level before Williamsport. So that's when it's like you win your state, or in my case, District of Columbia, which is an important point. It's much easier to do that. Then you go to the regional where it's just like the best team from every state. That was in Bristol, Connecticut. At the time, it was like the Mid-Atlantic region, which was six teams. I went my 11 year and my 12 year. And I think I'm one of the few people who like got to end the Little League career with a win. Like, it was pool play and we went 0-3 and then won our final game. And I scored the go-ahead run and I had a 6-out save, I believe, on the mound. And, you know, I was a drama queen, so they put me on the cover. And apparently that picture of me was up in the like Bristol press box for years after the fact, while I was a kid, like before I started, not because, you know, I have a mildly popular baseball podcast, but the Little League World Series as a thing is very important to me. It really fostered my love of the sport. It was a place that, like, when you're doing it, you dream about it. I obviously have coached Little League. My kids did not have a great showing in the tournament this year. I'm still very proud of them. And so as a whole, this is just it's the best. Like, it breaks down any, once you go and you see Williamsport in person and you'll talk about this, Jordan, like, it just breaks down any of the cynicism you may have about the event or the sport at all.
Yeah. And ultimately, what is really important to remember is it isn't about the baseball. Now, the baseball is a perfect venue. It is a competition and the best players do leave an impression. But the reality is that these are not the best 11 and 12 year olds from the world. There are some really good ones, but it is those who are playing official Little League across the world. But that's the part that is so special about it. This event that has this rich history of many former big leaguers and just so many people over decades and decades to bring teams together from all over the world for a literal World Series where you have 10 different countries represented and 10 different states represented, because they've expanded it to 20 teams now, which is kind of overwhelming, but also extremely cool because you just have more variety and more diversity of players who are coming from a really far ways to get to central Pennsylvania, whether that's Australia, the Czech Republic, you know, Chinese Taipei and Japan. And, you know, of course, this year we have Panama and Puerto Rico and Venezuela and Mexico, and just it, all of those kids interacting with each other. Not to mention, of course, the U.S. teams that, because it's 11 and 12 year olds, it's very random. It's not like Texas is there every year. It's not like Florida is there every year. You know, yes, there are some programs in some states that have a richer history, but man, like, you don't really know who's going to show up there. Like, it's not the same kids. And man, this year, like, Texas went 0-2 against Connecticut and Massachusetts. Like, if that was a bunch of high schoolers, that just isn't going to happen. But if you've got like the right mix of kids from Connecticut or Massachusetts, yeah, you can beat the kids from Richmond, Texas. So It is about the baseball in the most purest form, but it's just a celebration of the sport at an age when it is just pure and it's just fun. And so when you have this event with that now, you know, in collaboration with MLB, where you basically unleash two major league teams into this complex for what is essentially a free-for-all. Now, it has definitely gotten more organized than it was the first 2 years when we went in 2017 and 2018, when like there were no barricades in the walk-up from the parking lot. Like, it was just, they just get off the bus and it's just three straight hours of madness. They've definitely gotten a lot better at keeping it a little bit more routine-oriented, somewhat more of a schedule. But it's still a lot. It's, whatever, it's a big league roster. There's 30-plus guys just kind of roaming around, and you really just never know what you're going to see. You never know the interactions that are going to be happening between a certain team and a certain player, and where they're, it's the unpredictable nature of it is what makes it beautiful, because you both know that you're going to see something really cool, but you don't know when the day starts. And I think that really kind of sums up my experience being there for the third time.
It's also free. The games are free. Like, going to the games.
Get in. If you can get to Williamsport, you can park for free too. You can park for $5 in the neighborhood, or you can park for free and you can just walk on in. Yeah.
And that, to me, allows a different type of person to go to the games and watch the games. Right. Like, now, if you want to go buy a hot dog, it's probably expensive. Right. And the merch is expensive. And I'm not saying it's free, free. But like, compared to going to a Phillies game, like, that's what part of the reason I love this event so much is that it is for everybody. Like, it is, you just walk in, show up. Any highlights from this being there?
Yeah. And also, to that point, free, like, there are like reserved tickets for the seats in the stadium, but because of the way the complex is set up, that doesn't matter at all. There's so many places to stand and sit that you can see and enjoy the game in an extremely like lovely fashion, that you don't need a ticket, you don't need a seat. Like, it makes no difference. You can sit on the hill, you could just stand beyond the outfield fence in any of these. Like, it's so great to be able to just move between, because of course there's games going on at both stadiums most of the times. So you can kind of, you just kind of hear the buzz of like, oh, that game's closed, oh, that game's a blowout, okay, let's run over here and watch Mexico versus Puerto Rico, or Mexico Panama, or Australia Canada, oh, okay, Hawaii's playing well over here, oh, watch out for, you know, Massachusetts. It's just that kind of buzz throughout, especially in these opening weekends when all the teams are still there. It's a double elimination tournament, but even the teams that get eliminated, of course, are a part of this weekend with the major leaguers when they show up on Sunday. So, you know, I think what's difficult is there are so many moments that are like worth a story, that are worth,
oh, yeah,
you know, 1,500 words. That it is really hard to distill it into one. And I, you know, I ended up writing and focusing on the little dumper, a little kid on the Northwest team from about 40 miles south of Seattle, who, talking to him, Colton Audette and his dad, Andy, who's one of the coaches, and just kind of telling it through the lens of this team, who, you know, a couple months, even a month and a half ago, we're just like, man, if we could win a state title, that would be the coolest thing that would ever happen to us.
Oh, yeah.
And then here they are, having won a state title, having won a regional title, having gotten to Williamsport, having won on Sunday morning to kind of keep their season alive. And Cal Raleigh's wearing his shirt that he gave him during BP, and it's just any homers. And it's just like, what is this experience that is just, you know, it is all very kind of fantasy for these kids and these coaches and these families. And then, but on top of it, like I said, it's just all nonstop. You're seeing Team Puerto Rico, you know, just in awe that Francisco Lindor is just sitting next to them in the stands. You know, you see Randy Arozarena, who has embraced his connection to Mexico, a country, of course, born in Cuba, but someone who's spent a lot of time in Mexico, lives in Mexico, Mexican citizen. He represents Mexico in the WBC. Seeing that Mexican team, which is one of the stars, just their games have been amazing, and just their personalities. Seeing them with Andres Munoz and Randy Arozarena is incredibly cool. Of course, this is the team from Seattle, you know, with the Mariners, but so many different connections. All those international ones are incredible. The team from Venezuela, of course, what they've been through to get here from strictly from a political standpoint is really, really hard. And you saw that. I mean, Carlos Mendoza, these kids are from his hometown in Barquisimeto. And he didn't even realize, he said he didn't know that they were from his hometown until like the morning of. And so that really gave another layer for him of just thinking about himself as a 12-year-old, you know, in Venezuela and what that would mean for him to experience something like that. So many of those moments. You can read kind of my broad recap on Yahoo. But ultimately, I'm saying all that because the game that happens on Sunday night, like it's important. It counts for the Mariners and the Mets, yeah. But it's an afterthought. It's an epilogue. The kids there don't care what's going to happen in the game. They just want to get to watch big leaguers up close in the smallest attendance of the season, which I think is so cool, right? 2,500 capacity in that ballpark. It's such an intimate setting for a major league game. And in a real way, not in the BS John Fisher way, come to Sacramento and see Aaron Judge up close. It's like, no. This is what intimate looks like, okay? 2,500 tucked into just this little Pennsylvania neighborhood where there's a public park and you can see the houses beyond the outfield fence. It all just feels very old-timey. It's so pure and so cool. So obviously the game itself was not that exciting. The Cal Raleigh homer was cool. The Mets certainly played better. Real big bounce back for them after just another awful loss on Friday, looking much better on Saturday, kind of cruising on Sunday. Clay Holmes looks solid. Vientos hits a homer. But man, I mean, it's such a cool day, and I'm lucky to have gotten to cover it again.
I want to read a quick email from Sam. Sam says, hi, Jake and Jordan. With Jordan and Williamsport, I cannot help but think of the good vibes of the Little League World Series. When I was 12 years old at the event in 2018 and got to watch my fellow Little Leaguers play and see my favorite team, it's a beautiful event. This got me thinking, are these good vibes contagious enough to improve clubhouse morale within the teams that visit? Could this lead to more wins? I went back and checked. For the MLB teams that have played in this event in the 10 games leading up to Williamsport, these teams are a total of 68-72, 486 winning percentage in the 10 days after spending a day in Williamsport. Those same teams are 77-63, 550 winning percentage. Now, the statistician in me might try and tell me that the sample size is too small, but that's no fun. I'd like to believe that exposing big leaguers to Williamsport, having them hang out with and watch little leaguers play, makes these big leaguers better themselves. It's an event that Ted Lasso would wholeheartedly endorse. I love that, dude.
Yeah. Yes. And you know,
it's both
the Tigers, dude. Last year, the Tigers season took off like right after this. They walked off in the Little League Classic against the Yankees, and then they were on fire. So yeah, it's hard. Of course, it's an easy narrative to spin for any team. And you could say, oh, but it's also a logistical headache to come out here. But as Julio said, you know, in my story, like it's so worth it. It's not even a question. And I know that it is a lot to ask. In some ways, it is a long day, but it's both exhausting and rejuvenating at the same time, I think.
Yeah. Very quickly on this series, I'll just fly through this. The Mets imploded. Yeah. Again, on Friday night in an ugly game. Game two on Saturday, Nolan McClain making his MLB debut. He was awesome. Struck out 8, walked 4. Mariners don't hit. Game three, Clay Holmes good. George Kirby bad. Vientos homer. Like you said, Cal hits number 47. What a thing. And the Mets take the series. They're headed here to D.C. I'll see them this week. Ooh. In the first matchup in MLB history between two Venezuelan managers. Miguel Cairo for the Nationals and Carlos Mendoza for the Mets. Wow. It is a significant enough event, Jordan, that friend of the program, Venezuelan icon, Danny Alvarez of LX Navase, is en route to my house to sleep in that room right now.
That is incredible news. And by the way, again, just linking this back to Little League, this Venezuelan team is really good. And they finished third last year, and they're 2-0 right now. I don't know if they're playing again today or tomorrow, but I could see this Little League team going on a real run here. So this is definitely a storyline to watch. Mariners are heading to Philadelphia for more games against teams that are not good. I mean, Phillies have some interesting stuff going on, as we're about to talk about. But before we go to Phillies Nationals, which you got to see IRL, let's talk about two other quick things from Mariners adjacent and this weekend, this broadcast, I should say. The first thing is sticking with Little League Classic. Obviously, when you have an event like this, you have all the MLB, you know, heavy hitters in attendance, including the man himself, Commissioner Manfred, who was on the broadcast doing, and again, in an event like this, it's standard for him to join, but like the commissioner doesn't go on these things and say anything by accident, right? He is sometimes for better, sometimes for worse, quite transparent, quite honest about the state of affairs. And so it is not surprising that he said some things that caught some people's attention. So I understand the thing that was most, you know, inspired the most reaction was the premise of geographically realigning the league in the event of expansion, which is very much near the top of his to-do list for the remainder of his tenure as commissioner. But because this is just how we function, anything, the premise of this was so juicy that it, like, the actual logistics and like timeline did not matter. It was just like, oh my God, what are the divisions going to look like? It's like, okay, let's take a breather here. But yeah, if MLB expands to 32 teams, as the commissioner has said very clearly that he wants to do, or at least have in place, have a plan to do by the time he is done as a commissioner, that geographically realigning with either, I guess, 8 divisions or 4 divisions or however you would do it would make a lot of sense.
It's not happening soon. I would compare this to worrying about where my child is going to go to college. I have no children. It is in the distant future. Now, is it fun to think about? Yeah. It's fun to think about the Mets, Yankees, Phillies, and Red Sox being in a division that would, you know, lead to divorces and, you know, misdemeanors and drunk and disorderly conduct. But it's not happening soon. And I feel kind of split about it. I do think that realignment is necessary and will enable less travel, and I think will lead to a better product as a result. Like, the number of, there are so many days in the MLB season that are just getaway afternoon days where one team is like, you know what? We're not locked in. You know what I mean? Like, you've been to those games. I'm not saying that they're not trying, but the level of intensity and focus is different because they're trying to get out of there. And it's like, I think if you do realignment, you would have fewer of those because you could change the way that the schedule works. And I think that would be a positive thing. I understand people who love the NL and the AL setup and the tradition that that is. If you think, though, for 7 seconds and try and explain the AL and the NL to someone with no context or interest in the sport, it does not make sense. Like, it does not track.
Also,
have you ever done that?
Also,
I did that recently with my wife. I was like, so this is the American League and there's the National League. She's like, what's the difference? And I'm like, well, back when William McKinley was president, there were just 2 different leagues. And then they got together.
And by the way, that is what is funny about this is that the logistical advantages of potential realignment that you're describing would be a response to what has become more logistical challenges of a balanced schedule. And I've talked to players and coaches about this, that like, I like that everybody plays everybody. I like that every team goes everywhere every couple of years. I think that that is, as we know, because the commissioner has said it, like, that's part of also a way to grow the game, is to have everyone go to every city and have more matchups between teams. But it also presents a lot of challenges because you are dealing within the former rigid structures of the divisions that creates a lot of difficult travel and weird scheduling that would be, the burden would be lessened if you did realign.
I don't care as much about everybody going anywhere. I care more about more division matchups. And I think that the new schedule for that reason is worse. I was talking to Kyle Schwarber about this when the Phillies were here this weekend. And he was like, dude, playing a team twice instead of playing a team 3 times, it feels different. You feel less like a part of your division. And I don't care about the fair, like, personally, I don't care about the fairness aspect of it. From like, the Red Sox have a harder schedule than the Reds. It's like, yeah, well, guess what? The teams in the big divisions also have more money to spend.
Right.
You know, like, sure. And so to me, it just balances out. If you don't like a play better, win more games. I want to see the Yankees and Red Sox six times and not four. I want to see Dodgers Padres six times and not four, rather than watching an interleague matchup that's like, okay, Phillies Rays gets to happen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No, that's totally valid. I see it both ways. I've kind of gone back and forth on it as we've now kind of settled into this new landscape because, yeah, the division matchups are still the ones that are the juiciest. In some ways, you've created more scarcity that they feel more important. You could make that argument. But you could also say, to your point, well, I'd still rather watch those games more. I think it's funny because you ask fans, it's like, do you want to play your rival that's also really good more often? It's like a higher upside, but also like more potential for if you're a San Diego Padres and this weekend and you're like, do I really want to play the Dodgers more? So, but I see it. It's yeah, no, it's interesting. Well, it does matter because if we're really talking about what matters is fans and who's going to be paying the money and whatever.
I'm saying, I think it matters. I want the games to matter more. Like that's what I think is more intriguing. Is for the division matchups to have more heft.
That's totally valid. Yeah. And it's all related to, okay, what can we sell to TV, let alone what do we think is going to sell more tickets? And all these things are just, you know, how much money can we make? But it is interesting. I do think that we will continue to have versions of these conversations, but this is so far down the road years-wise that it's hard to take too seriously right now.
Realignment and expansion. What is this, a trip to the orthodontist? All right. One quick thing before we take a break. Phillies and Nats split a 4-game set. We're throwing that here in Field Report because I did go. Went on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. They split the series. Yoan Duran gets doinked in the foot on Friday night, and they don't have like the medical cart available for him because there was a post-game concert, and like the medical cart was blocked by like the drum set and speaker system. And so they had to shepherd Duran off in the bullpen cart. Did you see this?
Oh, no, I didn't. I missed this. So I know Duran, there was discourse with an injury recently where like the Angels didn't have the cart ready and everyone was angry.
Yeah.
But now that version
so
of
that Duran
happened,
gets doinked in the foot. He's like in the bullpen cart, like half crying, like towel over his head as, you know, he's being taken off the field. Now, he's fine. Totally fine. Like pitched yesterday. Turned out to be a huge bullet dodge for the Phillies. However, Zach Wheeler going on the IL with a blood clot in his quote right upper extremity. I was there for this. I stayed for the whole game on Saturday, which was just really a brutal offensive performance from the Phillies. They hit into a lot of hard outs, but Cade Cavalli just diced them up. After the game, media heads down to the Phillies clubhouse and they're like, hey, Dave Dombrowski is going to talk to you first before Rob Thompson talks to you. And everyone's like, well, you didn't trade for anyone. that's not allowed. So what could this be? And then Dombrowski's like, yeah, we're putting Zach Wheeler on the IL with a blood clot in his right upper extremity. We have no further information and we're going to do more tests this week. And it's like, what? Now, a couple things here. We'll know more in 48 hours than we do right now. First thing. Second thing, like, thoughts to Zach Wheeler. Anything with a blood clot is freaking scary as hell and not something where the priority is necessarily like about is he going to be back on the mound. Now, I also think that, you know, that conversation is relevant when you have the best pitcher on one of the best teams, a top four pitcher in the league. This could be any number of things, right? There are examples of players having blood clots that are related to thoracic outlet syndrome. That's what happened with Merrill Kelly, who had surgery, missed 6 weeks, came back, and then was way better than he was beforehand, right? So it did not derail his career. But then you have an example of a pitcher like Scott Oberg. Remember Scott Oberg with the Rockies? He had a blood clot in his arm in 2019 and never pitched in the big leagues again. And so we just don't know, right? We really have no idea. It is certainly better that the clot is in his throwing arm and not on his left side. And that seems to be the proximity to the heart, right? Now, based upon my very cursory research into this, if you have a blood clot, you take blood thinners, right? Blood thinners, you can't really do real exercise on. Like, you can't really do contact stuff on blood thinners. And so if that is the course of action here, it would be unlikely that Wheeler pitches again this season.
Yeah. I mean, we just had Victor Wembanyama was out for the season due to a blood clot. Now, I don't think, I can't remember where that was for him, but this is a real scary situation, medical ailment that does happen to regular people and high profile athletes all the same. And as you mentioned, that yeah. the unpredictability of it is what is both just very scary from a human standpoint and also very difficult to just talk about if we are going to analyze what it means for the Phillies rotation. So yeah. definitely ominous, and we wish the best for Zach, a guy who, man, I mean, again, like, not to get too dramatic that, here, dude. But I mean, he was doing, we was like, well, how much better can Zach Wheeler realistically get in his age 35 or 36 season? It's like, oh, actually a lot better. You can keep getting better. So, very important for the Phillies and a career and someone who to watch what he's become the last couple of years has been really special. So hopefully he will be back soon in some form. Hopefully he is okay. We will see how that, I'm sure we will get. I mean, I guess I'm not sure. I don't even know how to talk about when we're going to hear anything, but I'm certainly not counting on hearing anything soon, but we will see. So thank you for that insight.
Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll turbo mode through all the other CRI from the weekend. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Before we throw it into turbo mode, last week I introduced a concept that we've talked about on this pod many times. That cannot happen is when something happens that can't happen. We had something that happened that can't happen over the weekend, which was Victor Robles throwing his bat at the pitcher. Now, in a AAA game, outfielder for the Mariners, been out most of the year with an injury. That sucks. I believe he's had a very difficult go of it, coming back with a lot of hit by pitches. That being said, you cannot throw your bat at the pitcher. Right, Jordan?
Yeah, this one's pretty simple. I don't think we have to over-explain this one. The rough context here is that Victor Robles, who has been working his way back from a very serious upper body injury, which he sustained making one of the great plays of the season, if you recall.
Unreal back play.
Earlier in San Francisco, just an outrageous catch diving into the net down the right field line in San Francisco. I can't remember what that was, a broken collarbone or something. Anyway, it was a very serious injury. He's been out for a long time and working his way back. He has been rehabbing, and he has been hit by like 5 pitches in a very short amount of time, and he was not very happy. Now, I will also point out that Victor Robles has been getting hit by pitches his whole career. Like, this is not someone who has never been hit by a pitch and then suddenly he becomes Ty France. Like, no. This is also a guy who has been hit by a lot of pitches. Yeah. And he was not happy, and he did something that you can't do, which is pick up your bat and throw it in any direction that's not, you know, in a bat flip context.
It's just not what you just can't do that. Like, I am sympathetic to him being frustrated about getting hit by pitches. That's understandable. Like, what I would do, and what every player ever has done, besides, I guess, who is it, Delmon Young? I would not throw my bat at the pitcher.
I think that was throwing an umpire, which is obvious.
Okay, throw your bat. Like, every dude ever has not thrown their bat. And, like, to me, it is really that simple. Just don't throw your bat. That cannot happen.
Yes. And it's a tough season for Robles. And he posted an apology on Instagram talking about how difficult the season has been. And he's, you know, dealing with some stuff off the field. His mother passed away recently. So, and I guess the one other point I would make about this is that, and especially since you bring up Delmon Young, Victor Robles is a lovely human being. This is not someone known to have some crazy temper, and it's like, oh, he lost it, and like there goes Victor again. It's like, no. This dude is as like happy-go-lucky as it gets, and this is a bad moment where clearly he was overtaken by emotions that do not reflect the personality of doing them.
100%. It is a bad moment that requires a level of criticism. You can't just like
100%
wave
absolutely.
It away.
And I expect him to be I expect him to be disciplined. I don't know to what degree, but like so I assume he's going to get suspended. And I don't know how that works when you're on a minor league rehab, but yeah.
Yeah. So. And I really like, you remember when I was in the Dominican, I was graciously invited to his block party after they won the World Series in 2019 with the Nats, like on the street he grew up in. Grew up on, and it was awesome, like getting to meet him and all the people he knows and his family, and like he's a lovely dude, and this does seem like it was out of character. It still, you know, cannot happen. No. All right, let's go fast.
We don't have to bend over backwards and be like, actually throwing a bat was fine.
No, come on.
All right, let's go fast indeed.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need.
It's turbo time.
Jordan, you barely watched baseball over the weekend, and because I'm a good friend, I'm going to take care of this for you. Cubs, they took 2 out of 3 over the Pirates. Game one on Friday was marred, overshadowed by the Chicago Air Show, with jets flying like stupidly close and low and loud over Wrigley Field, startling pitchers on a number of occasions. There was multiple times where like the pitcher had to step off, be like collect themselves. I think it was happening all weekend, but there's an unreal clip of the one on Friday, which happened as Hayden Christensen and his daughter were singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the 7th inning. Cubs lose that one. Jack Sawinski, Chicago kid, homers in the 9th to give the Pirates a 3-2 win. Cubs on Saturday and Sunday, 2 comeback wins. The one on Saturday was their first comeback win since July 2nd, the longest stretch in franchise history. And then on Sunday, it was their first comeback win in over 20 hours as they beat the Pirates and get 2 comeback wins in a row. Still not really an invigorating series. There was a moment, I believe, where Kyle Tucker rolled over into an out and did not run to first and was booed. This Cubs offense has gone very downhill over the last couple of months. Any thoughts on this, Jordan?
My only question is, did we get a insight from former Air Force Academy member Paul Skeens about the air show? Was he just like standing there like stone cold? Like, yeah, what's the big deal, guys? Relax.
Everyone else is freaking out.
Unfortunately, I'm going to go see Paul Skeens pitch tonight in Pittsburgh. So depending on the vibes, maybe I will ask him after his start, but we will see about that.
That is very funny. I like the idea that this is some sort of origin story where he's like, you know what? That's really what I was meant to do. And he like,
He literally said, thought I was going to fly planes and instead I'm the best pitcher in the world. So, yeah, anyway.
Brewers taking 2 out of 3 over the Reds. Just 2 out of 3. The Brewers streak snapped. Game one and game two, both comeback wins, though. Mizorowski gets clobbered in game one on Friday. Reds go up 8-1. The Brewers are like, whatever. Andrew Vaughn, 3-1 shot, puts him back in it. They tied up by the 4th. 2 Christian Yelich homers using this bat with Bob Uecker's like face on it. Incredible. Brewers take that one. Happens again the next night. Ellie De La Cruz throwing out error in the 9th. Ties it up. Andrew Monasterio, 3-run bomb. Top 11 Brewers win their 14th in a row. And then on Sunday, the Brewers lose. Andrew Abbott stops the streak. 7 scoreless. Brewers punch back for 2 in the top of the 9th off of Emilio Pagan. But the Reds tie it up in the bottom half and win in extra innings. And the Brewers streak snapped at 14 games.
That's okay. They got their free burgers. And now they head to Chicago for a 5-game series against the Cubs. It was supposed to be 4 because of a rainout earlier. It will be 5-2 on Monday. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Brewers have a 8-game lead going into this series. So even if the Cubs can super mop this week or whatever we would call this weird 5-game set, they would still not be in first place.
Red Sox 2-3 over the Marlins. Giolito, awesome on Friday night. Trevor Story walk-off single. Story homers again in game 2. Sox win that one 7-5. Story has been awesome over the last couple of months. Almost deserves a comeback player of the year award for like in the middle of the season. Like maybe that should be Michael Harris too. Like you were just so ass for so long early. You came, I'm honestly more impressed by that. You know, like you came back in the middle of the year and Story dealing with injuries the last couple of years. Red Sox can't complete the sweep though. Jansen Junk outpitches Garrett Crochet. Crochet, meanwhile, lowers the ERA to 2.43. Scooble is at 2.42. Raise those eyebrows. Also, the Red Sox signed Nathaniel Lowe.
Close.
Does Nathaniel Lowe get a playoff plate appearance?
I mean, first base is not solved. Like, Abraham Toro's been awful for the last month. I thought that maybe they would give Christian Campbell a shot. He's been playing first base and hitting well in AAA. I guess that could still happen, but I think yes. I'm actually going to say yes. Nathaniel Lowe does get a playoff play appearance. I will go for it and say yes right now. So we'll see.
Orioles take 2-3 over the Astros for some reason. On Friday, Brandon Young, a player that none of you have ever heard of before, carries a perfect game into the 8th inning. Former Oriole Ramon Urias, who's traded the deadline, breaks it up with an infield hit. O's win 7-0. Then the Orioles call up Dylan Beavers. He hits a double, but the Astros win in 12. Walk-off fielder's choice from Ramon Urias. On game 3 on Sunday, Samuel Basayo called up. I'd say the Orioles' two most enticing position player prospects, Beavers and Basayo. He gets his first hit. Jordan Westberg goes 4-for-5 with a homer. Christian Javier's velo is way down, and he leaves early. Did not see an update there. The Orioles take 2-3 in Houston.
That is bad news about Christian Javier. I hope he is okay. I just wrote
illness
about him last week.
Team said
okay.
Illness.
I hope that is the case. I hope that his arm as he comes back from Tommy John is fine. And but still also like again, Astros, come on. This was an opportunity to add up get a little bit more of a cushion against Seattle, who had a tough weekend. And instead, I mean, you just get destroyed in 2 of these games. I mean, man, at home.
As long as the illness isn't my arm hurts, looks like he's going to be okay. Tigers take 3 out of 4, excuse me, over the Twins. They have a chance to take all 4 on Sunday, and they don't get it done. Scooble was good, not great in game 1. Charlie Morton, awesome in game 2. A Twins reliever I'd never heard of named Travis Adams walks 4 in an inning and a third and allows 2 hits. What do you know about, not to, you know, shame Travis Adams, but the Twins were.
I don't know much about Travis Adams, but like, yeah, duh, the Twins are going to be putting pitchers in that you've never heard of. That's kind of what they opted into when they traded their whole bullpen away. So, but hey, they didn't get mopped, so. God bless him.
And their mop avoidance was the blueprint. I mean, homers from Buxton, Lewis, and Brooks Lee. And that's what it's supposed to look like. Good job, guys.
Against Chris Paddock. Hilarious.
Just how you dream about. A's over the Angels. Kurtz hits his 24th on Friday. Langeliers hits his 25th in that game, too. He has been so good. A's win that 10-3. Game 2, A's win again. Homers from Colby Thomas and Brent Rooker. The Angels avoid the sweep with a 6-run top of the 10th on Sunday. A homer for Joe Adell as he enjoys a sustained good season. Like a good season from Joe Adell. The OPS plus is at 107. You'd like, you know, some more walks. Don't get me wrong.
He's going to hit 30 homers in the big leagues. Like this is what we were hoping he would do someday, and I'm happy for him.
Joe Adell is probably like all-star, if I had to do like an all-star team of nice dudes in baseball, like I would. Joe Adell is just such a kind fella. The A's, good for them. Two more here. Rays over the Giants in San Francisco. The highlight of this was game two. Justin Verlander's best start of the year. 7 scoreless, 8 Ks, 2 hits, and a no decision.
Wow, he just can't. It's just not meant to be, man. Do you know what's wild about this? I think how this season is going, and he's already said this, how the season is going seems to actually be motivating him to want to come back even more than if he was pitching well. Like, he's like, nah, man, I'm getting screwed, which is like maybe kind of true in some cases, but it's also not like he's dominating, so. Anyway, I have one big takeaway from this series, but anything else here?
Yeah, stat. Justin Verlander's 6th quality start of the year. No other pitcher has recorded 6 or more quality starts and only has 1 win to show for it. That stat is courtesy of Ben Verlander.
No. I saw Ben. Ben was here in Williamsport. I didn't notice that he was tweeting about his brother, but I know he does do that often. Here's my takeaway for the series. By the way, the Jung-Hoo Lee catch was outrageous, so that was cool. We are not talking enough about Junior Caminero. I know this Rays season has kind of gone sideways. This dude has 35 homers. He's 21. He's 22. He just turned 22 in July. And it's interesting because his splits, his overall offensive numbers are way better, like literally 300 points of OPS at home. At the Stein, but 18 homers at home, 17 homers on the road. Like, if we're just talking home run total, it's not, you know, that's not being only inflated by the Stein. And
yeah,
I mean, I just think about this guy who his hero, Manny Machado, like that's the guy he's like wants to become, you know. Obviously, he's nowhere near being the defender, and like you could even say the overall hit or whatever. Manny Machado has never hit 40 home runs in a season. And Junior Caminero might hit 45, you know? I mean, this guy is, he's doing it. And the fact that he is going to hit 40-plus homers easily and can clearly be so much better has to be, I mean, that is so exciting. I mean, his OBP is 298. He's grounded into a bajillion double plays. There's so much room for improvement, and he's going to hit 40 home runs in his age 21 season. That is ridiculous.
What a player.
So. Yes.
Rockies take 3 out of 4 over the Diamondbacks. Yeah, I said that. Rockies take 3 out of 4 over the Diamondbacks. Lose the first one and then just go on a run. W3 for the Rocks, winning close games at home on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We have a super weird final play on Sunday. Juan Mejia getting truck-sticked. What's our check-in of Rockies' worst record of all time?
I got it for you right here. So again, this is, folks, this is going to come down to the wire, okay? But 3-game winning streak here is big time. They are now on pace for, it seems like, about 45, 46 wins, which is, I mean, that's pretty good. That's remember, White Sox last year was 41. So 42 is the number we're trying to get to avoid White Sox infamy. So we'll see. We'll see. Again, remember,
getting there.
Remember, they have 14 more games against the Dodgers and Padres starting tonight. Okay. That's how crazy. Many of those games do they win over under 2.5? I think I'll go over. I think that they're going to do it though. Now, I don't know about that. They might go 0-14 against Dodgers and Padres, but I think 44-ish, 43, 44. I think we end up at Warren Schaefer. Right. I believe in you.
All right,
that's it. No, that was great. What a fun pod. Thanks for watching the baseball so I didn't have to. I will be in Pittsburgh tonight for Paul Skeens, just because it's conveniently on the way back and Paul Skeens is pitching. So that seems like a good time. So I'll check that out and then I will be back home in OHIO. We'll see if the Reds and Guardians can continue to stay relevant to some degree. But if not, that's fine. I can keep doing my job. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this podcast with me. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, TJ Brassel for producing. As always, you can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And we will be back on Wednesday, possibly with a very special guest. Mookie Betts again. Just kidding. No. But have some fun stuff lined up for later this week. So make sure you tune in. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.